Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 371, recorded on Tuesday, May 29th, 2018. Your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Hello to the three of us. It is good to be back. We are all surrounded by warm weather, I think.
Yes.
Yeah?
Too warm.
A little too warm in the New York region.
I had a great weekend.
Yeah? Nice warm weather.
Enjoyed yourself? Yeah.
Because we've been a little starved for it.
I was outside all weekend. And yeah, good. I dipped my feet in water two of those 3 days that we were off.
Oh. Did you swim?
Yeah.
I swam one of those 3 days. Second day was the bay, which
nice.
Is,
that's magical. Really. That's a good weekend, long weekend.
Yeah.
And then clear on the other side of the world where it is a half an hour. I can't even break apart the time difference anymore. Russell Ivanovic, Pocket Casts, and it was just great to have you back. I really wanted to run into you at Google I.O. this year, and it didn't happen, and I'm very bummed because I just found out you had a T-shirt for me.
Yeah, you missed out, Jason. You missed out, but thanks for having me on the show. It is unusually cold here in Adelaide. It's winter, but normally we have, like, our winter is your summer, and today it's freezing cold and raining, so I'm very sad.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Well, you should come out here and then be on the set with us and enjoy the weather afterwards, get a beer or something.
I should.
All right. We'll make that happen. Hey, something happened earlier this month, and it involved Pocket Cast, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. We're going to kind of put it off a little bit. We've got some other news to talk about first.
I like it.
But we'll tease ahead because, Russell, A, it's always great to get you on the show, and B, got some questions. We want to know about this whole deal that happened with Pocket Cast. Because
you guys have been waiting for this.
I'm a big fan.
I know. I use it every single day.
I use it every single day.
Well, so do I.
Yeah. What's up? I'm just getting on the call.
Do you subscribe to it? Because I subscribe to it.
No, come back, Russell. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you away.
Hey, so, Jason, that's a good question. Are either of you paid? Do you subscribe for Pocket Cast? Because I pay for it.
I pay for it.
Yeah,
on Jason? On a so monthly basis, I do not.
Oh, Jason, Ron, me,
Wait,
and
how,
Victor.
What? How are you paying on a monthly basis? Yeah. We don't have a subscription plan.
Yeah, there's no subscription.
Or I pay
because I listen for it. I listen to it online. I like to listen in the browser window.
Yeah,
that's a once off.
Oh,
yeah. It's worth paying for me.
That is still an extra level, though. So if you haven't paid the $9 for the web app, you're missing out.
Jason. Oh, so no, I don't listen through the web app. I paid for the app, but I don't listen through the web app.
I should have used that app I had in the arena a couple of weeks ago because I for sure thought it was a monthly payment. And I thought all this time I've been helping you, Russell. I didn't realize it was a one-time payment. I would have gladly paid that monthly.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start charging you monthly. That's a good idea, Ron.
No kidding. Half of your users think they're already paying on a monthly basis.
I thought it was a subscription. That's amazing. All right, look at that. We're already yielding results. I love it.
I just learned today that Pocket Cast is not a monthly subscription. It's your PSA for today's All About Android. It's one time only.
I think we're just giving you and the new owners of Pocket Cast some ideas for how to monetize in the future. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. We've also got a lot of other stuff to talk about, like we'll discuss the future of Essential.
Ooh, this discussion that's seems a hot button topic.
And that was exploding over the weekend. The HTC U12 Plus was announced. Nokia also announced a bunch of mid-range devices. There was wild Pixel 3 speculation.
Very wild.
Very wild.
Very wild.
And, probably unreal, but still fun to talk about. Google Lens update. I have the update. I'll show it off.
Yay.
Grasshopper, if you want to learn how to code and you're starting from the beginning, Google has you covered there. A couple of your emails and a whole lot more. But I think it's time that we get to the top news of the week, Victor.
Just like Flo, it's time to get your feet wet and dip into Android news.
So good, Victor. So good.
I will say, Victor's really coming to his own on the news bumper. It's so very good.
Yep.
Good job, Victor.
It's not an easy thing to do week in, week out.
Yeah, it's not. No. So speaking of the news, our good friend of the show, well, not really a wannabe friend of the show. I forget who is actually on the show versus who we pretend is on the show. Andy Rubin and Essential did not have a good long holiday weekend, as right before the weekend news broke, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg wrote that Andy Rubin was considering putting the company up for sale and canceling the next phone. So then surely that kind of reporting would require a response from Mr. Rubin. And I don't know. Do we have Andy Rubin on the line? Is he here?
I'm hoping we have him. Hey,
Victor. Oh, there he is. There he is. So Andy Rubin took to Twitter. And hello, Andy. Thanks for joining us. Where he says, Jason, do you want to give us Andy's quote in a different voice?
Sure. He said, "We always have multiple products in development at the same time, and we embrace canceling some in favor of the ones we think will be bigger hits. We are putting all of our efforts towards our future game-changing products, which will include mobile and home products."
So that tweet is a wonderful non-acknowledgement, denial, confirmation thing.
Yeah, unpack that and you've got nothing. You've got dead air.
Exactly. So then after that happened, Andy Rubin sent an email to all Essential employees, which then leaked out, of course, as things do. But the email stated that Rubin has no intention of shutting down Essential. So those of you in the chat room and on Twitter who are saying Essential RIP, not quite yet. Don't dance in that grave yet. He did confirm that they are seeking financial assistance from banks, and they might be sold under a deal in that regard. So he's not looking to shut it down, but looking to do what he can to save the company. He also stressed to employees that leaks would create difficulties in crafting the right deal. Which is not a good look. Those leaks are always a problem.
Yeah.
And so a little more background on Essential. They've raised $300 million to date from investors. Last year they were valued around $1 billion. And also, let's not forget that Andy Rubin did step away from Essential temporarily in response to workplace misconduct reports from his time at Google. But clearly he's back and tweeting. Yeah, so there you go.
Take him long to return, actually.
Yeah. I wonder what happened. So Essential. So it sounds like the next phone is canceled.
I don't know. What do you think, Russell? Did you ever have a chance to kind of play around with the Essential phone? It was on fire when it came out. There was a lot of buzz and everything, but it fizzled fast. In some ways,
Russell, talk about the Essential phone.
Let me tell you all about my Essential phone, kids. I should have had it here with me, ready to go. It's in that room. It's about 5 meters that way. I was one of the first people to get one because I was super excited, not just because Andy Rubin. I felt like in the early days he got a lot of attention because he's obviously well-known in the Android community, but just the thought of the phone, like a premium sort of high-end phone made by someone who's not a Samsung, not a HTC, you know, this pure sort of Android experience with promise, like, you know, super fast updates. And I was all in. I pressed the buy button. The Essential phone arrived here, and that is one gorgeous, gorgeous piece of hardware. And at that point, I'm like, this is a winner. And then I turned it on and played with it, and it was really obvious that the software was just underdone. You know, as a software developer, you look at it and you go, like, a lot of work has been put into this, but not enough work and not enough time. And they had scrolling issues, they had camera issues, they had crashing issues, they had freezing issues, they had all sorts of issues. And I know they've fixed some of those over time, but man, it was a bit of a mess. And I also think launching a phone like that in today's market, that's really hard. And, you know, we all know about the stories of how many they have and haven't sold. It hasn't been that many. Mm-hmm. And I'm not super surprised, to be honest. Like, making hardware is really, really, really expensive. And if you can't, you know, knock it out of the park and have a win, then, I mean, you can make an Essential phone too. You can keep going. But banks aren't going to keep, you know, giving you money. I see that quote in there that, you know, we're seeking financial assistance from banks. I think we all are. We'd all like some financial assistance from banks, but they're not going to keep giving you money if you can't have some wins. So I wouldn't be surprised if they end up selling to someone and maybe keeping the Essential brand and keeping that going forward. But you need a big backer like that before you can make a second product, because I can't imagine they can raise the money required to do like an Essential phone too and a home speaker and whatever else they're working on, you know, while not sort of running out of money in the meantime.
Well, the reality of that is that they raised $300 million and investors have expectations. And, you know, who knows? I don't know if we know any sales figures, but it's probably safe to say that sales did not meet expectations. And that's when a company has problems, right?
Definitely.
$300 million sounds like a lot of money. But when you think about all the research and design that went into it, manufacturing, all the certifications, all the shipments, all the components, all that sort of stuff, that money goes very, very fast.
Well, and you remember early on, I remember shortly after it was announced, and then, you know, Andy Rubin was on stage with a Business Insider, I think, from an event showing off the device for the first time. We were all watching it live while we were recording the show, if I remember correctly. But one of the things that Andy Rubin said at the time was, we're not looking to come out with a first phone that is like a record-breaking phone, right? We want to go at this slow and consistent. And even slow and consistent did not work. I mean, I saw a lot of posts, you know, over the weekend, and mind you, you know, a lot of them were reactionary to the fact that it's Andy Rubin, the quote, father of Android's company, and, you know, this type of news breaking. But, you know, to the tune of even the person who is instrumental in creating Android can't create a successful Android phone company in today's day and age. Do we think, I mean, is that true? Are we just so advanced at this point in the world of Android hardware? The marketplace is so huge, but so dominated by a very select few that even a company that was poised, at least from the outside, to do really well and armed with the person that created the dang, you know, platform to begin with, like, is this just where we are right now? It's that hard? What do you guys think?
I think it is, but I think the other thing is he shot really high, right? You have something like a OnePlus. They started off very sort of humble, if you like. They went for the mid-range phone. They went for not the too expensive features. They didn't want the best that, you know, it was out there. They went for a price range, and they hit that, and they've slowly sort of built up their user base over years. I think they're now up to the OnePlus 6, and they're still doing okay. But I think Andy Rubin had a lot of expectations, right? He didn't want to do that. He wanted to go straight for the top end, you know, where the Pixel and the Samsung live. And that is that I think, is a hard ask, like going straight for that sort of top premium level phone.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that we've talked a lot about this before in the past. I really think that if you build it, they will come kind of theory around hardware, especially around mobile phones, is the hardest hill to climb. Is that to offer a phone at the expensive price, you know, north of $500, sub $1,000 price point, and you could talk about the features, you could target it at people like us, but at the end of the day, Samsung is successful because it's in every carrier store. Mm-hmm. Right, HTC has been successful because it's been in every carrier store. The iPhone launched on a carrier store, like, so, you know, looking at Essential and playing Monday morning quarterback, if I was their, you know, biz dev guy, I'd be saying, listen, we need to launch with T-Mobile or with Sprint. Well, they did launch with Sprint. I guess that didn't, there goes my whole plan. But you need to be more aggressive about getting in front of consumers and figuring out a way to get over that gap between what is Essential and I want to have that phone. And, you know, again, right now, it's my whole theory about phones in the wild. I haven't seen an Essential phone in the wild at all. And I bet you if I stopped 10 people and said, do you know what Essential is? They would have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, they'd have no clue.
Yeah. And that's exactly the problem.
Yeah. Well, and what does it say about modular stuff? What does this say? I mean, that continues to not work.
I don't consider
work,
Essential
right?
to be a modular phone, though.
Yeah. I think they did initially. They had great plans to come out with a very rich.
I forgot until you mentioned that they had a 360 camera. You could.
That's still the only module you could buy for the Essential is that dang subpar 360 cam.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Motorola
was supposed to be more coming out. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not happening. There was also supposed to be the Home Assistant, which they actually announced at the same time as the phone. They have a whole landing page for that, too. It's more than announced. They really teased it as if it was coming soon, and here we are a year later.
And I mean, if you want to talk about tough markets to get into, that's another tough market to get into, considering how long Amazon and Google and sort of others have been in there.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, and now Google's out selling Amazon.
Well, yeah, that's true. I was seeing, I don't know too much about that story, but I read a headline that mentioned something like that.
Yeah, it was in my Google feed.
How Google Home is poised to surpass.
Yes.
All right. Well, so are we bummed?
Well, before we move on though, quick question of the panel: is Essential RIP? Is this it, or do you think we'll hear from them again?
No, Andy Rubin will be fine. He's got all his friends in Silicon Valley that are going to help him.
Right.
No, and I mean this. No. I don't mean that snarky. I mean it in all. Like, I mean, why do you think they had the Android N pre? Or wait, what? The what letter Android. Are we on? P. We're on P. Oh my god, Android P.
Nougat. You're talking about Nougat, right?
I forgot what version we're on. Anyway, but he's got like he's got friends in the right places.
Sure.
And, you know, he comes from like a long legacy of being this Android person. So I think he can sell that pretty well and he can use that to his advantage. Not to mention, he hired a lot of people and I don't think he's just going to like close the doors and just say like, goodbye, everybody. Thanks for coming over here and believing in this. You know, he, of course, that's why he's going to put forth that tweet that says like everything is fine because he's got a bunch of employees to think about, too. Like,
yeah.
People that are working really hard on the software for the Essential Phone. They're probably working really hard in whatever other stuff they've got going on. I think there is real potential there. I just think that they came out of the gate super, like, guns a-blazing without having any bullets left over to shoot later on. That's where I took that metaphor.
There's your metaphor.
I like it. Yeah, I think you're right. Russell, you're also spot on the fact that like they came out with a really nice-looking device, and that's kind of where it ended, right? Like, it was amazing design. Like, it was the kind of design that you held it in your hand, and you're just like, this is a really beautiful phone. But then, you know, it was kind of all looks. It's kind of all looks.
It's still the most beautiful phone I've ever held. If they just needed another year or so to work on that software, it just wasn't done. I don't think that's the software developer's fault. Like, building an operating system is pretty damn hard. Like, it's not an easy thing to take on.
Yep. Absolutely.
And also, we have to look at OnePlus as well, because it took them a while to really like gain the kind of traction that they have now and really get to the point where they are now. Because in the beginning, a lot of people were like, who is this other brand? Why are they so weird in their marketing, because they were doing a lot of things wrong in the beginning. And then they iterated on that. And, you know, it's like, if you're going to be a successful company, you can't just come out of the, especially not in this world, you can't just come out of the gate and go, yeah, I'm here, everybody. Buy my stuff.
Yeah. OnePlus did a lot of things wrong. But what they did right, they got probably the most critical components right.
The hardware was
really great. The software was pretty dang close, if not stock, so it was really hard to mess up. So was Essential. I don't know how that got messed up, but somehow it did. They took the slow and steady route. Here we are, you know, years down the line, and they're still that kind of higher quality hardware at a price point that's lower than everyone else. Essential.
And we learned that their devices are optimized with Project Treble.
Now.
Unlike, and Samsung phones are not, right? I believe.
Well, I think the new ones, the ones that are launching with Oreo have to be, is it Oreo? Yeah.
I just mean to say that they're super. I mean, they seem super committed to this. So I don't.
We'll see.
You know,
time will tell.
Time heals all wounds.
You got the next one.
I don't know whose wound is going to be healed by this, though, because this is just. Well, I guess this is a blow to the ego for anybody out there who just really loves Google Play. Actually, I'm going to be really interested to hear what Russell says about this. So, Morgan Stanley research has a report that shows the revenue-generating gap that exists between the iOS App Store and the Google Play Store is more than 4 times the net revenue per download over the Play Store. So, Apple gives developers 4 times net revenue, or rather, developers are making 4 times the net revenue, that's what I'm trying to say, per download over the Play Store. So in the first quarter of this year, Q1 2018, the App Store had 44 cents of revenue per download, whereas the Play Store only had 10 cents. Also, the money made per device is 10 times higher on iOS than Android, because I'm assuming, I'm trying to actually think about that.
Can I jump in here?
Yes.
Because I'll tell you why I hate things like this with graphs is people make this mistake all the time, and it's really easy to make these graphs. It's absolutely 100% true that per download and per device, iOS generates more revenue. Zero doubt about that. They're more premium phones. They sell to less people. The thing that you forget is Android sells, what, 6, 7, 8 times more? Like, you can't say, per download, I had this much money. If I've made 5 times more downloads on Android, guess what happens to those numbers? They actually, like, even back out. And it's really easy to draw these graphs, and this is why they annoy me every single time, because about once a year, Apple will actually tell you how much they give to developers in total. Google will tell you the same. And if you follow those trends over the last 3, 4 years, Google is rapidly catching up to Apple. So it wouldn't surprise me if in a year or two, the checks that Google's writing in total to developers are actually higher than the checks Apple's writing. That's just inevitable. But it's also true that per device and per app install, You'll make more on iOS. Just if you have 50 downloads on iOS and 50 downloads on Android, you'll make more with the iOS ones on average. But that's not normally how it works, and that's not our experience either. You might have 50 downloads on iOS and 300 on Android, and that's how you make up the difference. Like, you've got all the lower end phones, and you've got people who might not be interested in your app. You know, they download it, it's too expensive, they uninstall it. But I think overall you can make just as much money in both stores. I really have issues with these sort of articles and the way they sort of phrase things.
Yeah, well,
that's my
I do too. I agree. I totally agree. This is such a clickbaity headline. You know, we see this article. We see, Jason, how many years have we seen this story? Right?
I almost prefaced it with that. Here we are again. Here we go again. and, you know, May 2017, Google had shared, this time last year, a year ago, it had 2 billion monthly active devices. February of this year, Apple announces it has 1.3 billion active devices worldwide. So that kind of shows the number of devices disparity and how that can play with the numbers as well.
That is quite a big disparity when you think about it.
Yeah. Big difference there. Although actually when I read that, I was like, wow, Apple has that many active devices. That's more than I thought that they did. But, I wouldn't be surprised. We're a year later, 2 billion devices, you know, Android devices is going to be more now as well.
It includes iPads, right?
Yeah,
and all the other like iOS-y devices. I'm sure there's some old iPod touches out there that are still clinging on for dear life.
Yep, and I bet knowing Apple, they're probably counting Apple Watch as well. They're like, that's in there too. Runs iOS, sort of.
Can they do that?
I'm sure they can.
They can do whatever they want. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Pocket Casts deal.
Like the podcasts?
That's appropriate as well.
Does this make this meta?
Kind of. Yeah, it's a podcast about the
Pocket
Casts.
Super meta, actually.
If you're listening to this on Pocket Casts, it's very meta, actually.
It is.
So earlier this month, of course, we talked about this on the show. Everybody talked about this, of course. News broke that there was a group, including NPR, WNYC Studios, WBEZ Chicago, and This American Life, are acquiring Pocket Casts. And we're like, hey, I know them. This is very interesting. Talk a little bit about the deal from your perspective, Russell. What can you tell us about it?
Very interesting. So for those of you that, by the way, I should say on the meta angle, I'm actually wearing a Pocket Cast shirt. So if you're listening to this on Pocket Cast, I work on Pocket Cast. I have the t-shirt. There's a whole bunch of angles you can make
it
here.
It goes deep.
So for those of you that haven't heard, about a month ago, Pocket Cast was acquired by, four different organizations that came together. So you have NPR, you have WNYC, you have WBEZ and This American Life. For anyone that listens to story-based podcasts, they're some of the top sort of podcasters out there in the world. So we started talking to them about 12 months ago, and they said, hey, is there some kind of partnership that we can come to that kind of, you know, where we can build out a platform for podcasters that's for everybody, I guess, which, you know, looks like you're already working on. Eventually, you know, things went backwards and forwards, and eventually we sort of settled on an acquisition. And I should point out right from the outset, we had a lot of concern when this went live. I think people assumed it was like the Essential deal, right? They're like, Pocket Cast is running out of money. They had to cut a deal. But the fact is we're a profitable company. Like, we had no problems with the money coming in. It was increasing sort of every year. So it wasn't a deal we did out of desperation, which is always a good place to be. It was a deal where we looked at the future of podcasting, and we said to ourselves, what happens if a big player, and I won't name any big players, but what happens if one of them comes in and actually tries to lock up the market? Like, we're that small that it's going to be really hard to defend against that. And what that'll mean is, if they succeed, right, is that eventually there is no more Pocket Cast. And if it exists, it's very sort of niche and for premium people that know how to paste in RSS feeds, and you can run your own sort of pirate podcasting sort of space. So that's what we're kind of interested in, is what can we do to keep podcasting open? And these people had exactly the same goals. They're like, what can we do to keep podcasting open? And they knew that they weren't software companies, right? So they make amazing, amazing audio content, but they're not really software companies. You know, they're not set up to build software. They're not set up to build platforms. So that's kind of where we come in. And the plan from here, I guess, is to, you know, to scale up the size of our team, to do some more ambitious things. I can't talk about those things yet, not because I'm trying to be, you know, I'm sitting in my secret dungeon trying to lock up all podcasting or anything like that. It's more just like, you know, there's things we're working on that we will sort of launch to the world later on, but we've got to work on them first. It's no good to talk about them now and then not launch them, or launch them 12 months from now and be like, see, this is the thing we talk about. And people are like, I don't care. Like, you told me this 12 months ago. So we're kind of like deep in the weeds at the moment, like working through stuff and, you know, planning out future things. But the idea is simple, is to you know, I know it sounds really lofty, but to keep podcasting open, you've got these mission-based not-for-profit organizations that are involved. They're not interested in locking it up for themselves. They're not interested in just promoting their content. And I should say they've all got their own apps. So there is an app called NPR One that I believe is for NPR stuff. WMYC has an app. You can go and get the This American Life app. You know, those things exist. That's how they promote their content, and that's where you exclusively get their content. But Pocket Cast is going to remain a podcasting app for the entire industry. So it's not just for those four players. They're not interested in, you know, kicking all the twits of the world out and stuff. It's about making podcasting better for everybody. And I guess I know this sounds really lofty and weird, but this is the phrase that kept coming up in all the meetings that we had, is that a rising tide floats all boats. And that's kind of what we're aiming for. Like if we can make podcasting better, if we can give producers better tools, if we can, you know, give the listeners a better experience overall, then you can kind of lift the standard for everybody, not just the people that purchased us, I guess. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So when I heard about this, the kind of the collective group, NPR, WMYC, WBEZ, and This American Life, I don't know if that's leaving anyone out. One question I had about that, and I maybe you're the wrong person to ask about this because they approached you, but how did they come together on this? Like, how did that decision happen that they all decided this is the next step that we want to take in the world of podcasts? We've got our individual efforts, but we want to come together, the four of us, and then you know, that turns into an acquisition of Pocket Cast. Do you have any insight into that?
Yeah, I can give you a little bit of insight into that. So without going into too many details, they actually started this process 2 years ago, and they got together and they saw the same sort of threats that we saw coming in the podcasting space, from big players, from huge amounts of investment going to private companies, from all these people that knew podcasting was growing, and they just wanted to cut that off for themselves. Like, I'm not talking about the people that acquired us. I'm talking about other people sort of working on things. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what can we do about this threat that's coming? Like, we should be in control of the platforms we distribute on. We should have, you know, the freedom to distribute our content everywhere. Like, we don't want a model where we have to go through like another company who's going to charge us outrageous fees and we have to license podcasting. Like, no one wants that. They want podcasting to stay open. So 2 years ago they started on that project internally. The four of them got together and started discussions about it, and I'm not super privy to that side of things. I wasn't involved back then, but a year into it I think they decided that they weren't software companies and they weren't capable of doing this on their own. Like, I think that's quite, when you think about it, it's easy to think that you can do everything and you're the greatest and you're amazing. But I think it's really self-aware to say, you know what, we're not software companies. We need to find ourselves a software company that we can work on. And I think that's where they originally approached us. And I think they approached other people as well. Like, we weren't the only people they talked to.
Now, obviously, when this happened, there was quite a lot of reaction. I think a lot of the reaction, the like press reaction and comments that I would read were just from that kind of uncertain uneasiness about an app that, let's face it, if you know, everybody, like, we're all podcast listeners, consumers, we are very like attached to the app that we've chosen because there are so many of them. They all do things so many different ways, and you search and you eventually find the one that kind of speaks to you, right? Speaks your language. You can either dive really deep on it or it's very simple. So anytime something like this happens, it's easy to look at it and fear the change. How now that that's kind of settled down a little bit, have people that you've talked to, that you've heard from online, how are they responding to what they've heard about this deal going, you know, in the past month?
Yeah, absolutely. So the interesting thing about when this deal went live is we knew about it obviously beforehand. We'd signed all the papers and stuff, and I think it was about a month between that and it actually being announced. So we were actually on a train.
If you were surprised by the news.
wait a minute, what?
It's weird. Some people thought we were, and I'm like, I don't know how you get that impression. These things, we're not like a publicly traded company that you can do like a hostile takeover or whatever. But anyway, we obviously knew about it. We were on a train to DC at the time when it got announced, and it was quite interesting to see the reaction. And in hindsight, I think it was really natural. If I had an app that I really used and got a lot of enjoyment out of, I'd be a little bit nervous if it got acquired as well, because the first question is obviously it's getting acquired, so you can change something about it potentially. Like, what is that change going to be? And I think a lot of online commentators and bloggers and sort of you know, people went in all these different directions, and one of the assumptions was, oh, they want to harvest my data. That's clearly what this is about. And I guess there are some sort of historical reasons why that might have been what they thought, but we came out really early on with, you know, two different blog posts that you can read on the Shifty Jelly blog, just explaining that this is not about your data. We're not handing over your data to anyone. We're not suddenly going to start selling like your data. Our privacy policy is is unchanged. In fact, we have the data. No one else has the data. That includes the people that own us. And it was never about that. And I think it was weird to, there's the article there, that some people thought that. But we were fine just coming out and saying, hey, that's not why we're doing this. Like, it's not about that. It's not about invading your privacy. We're not going to start asking for, like, your location data or anything weird like that, which, a few sort of reporters went there as well. It's really not about any of that. And I know that surprised some of those people. And I think that calmed a lot of our customers down as well. They're like, you know what? The company is still essentially in the same hands. Like, it's the original team is still running the show. We're still a separate company. We still get to set, like, our own direction. We're just kind of working, I guess, in partnership with them. So potentially where we have some aligned goals for, things we want to see, like open podcasting, for example, then we can work together, towards those things. And where some of our goals aren't aligned, like where potentially NPR wants to do stuff in the NPR one-up, they can continue to do that. App is not replacing theirs. Their app is not replacing ours. We're not trying to look to do that sort of cross-promotional type thing. It's really just about, building the best podcasting app we can with hopefully more resources. We've got 4 new backers now, so we can start hiring people. We can do some more ambitious things and things that we've been planning for years that we've had on a whiteboard. I don't know if you've ever done this. You draw something on the whiteboard and you're like, actually, it's going to take like X amount of people and X amount of months. We can't afford to do that. Let's just shelve that one for later. So now we're hoping that we can actually, do some of that stuff going forward. Mm-hmm. So I think to answer your final question, like the reaction has definitely died down now. I think after we published those blog posts, people realized that not a lot was changing and, it's still Pocket Cast at the end of the day, but hopefully, made better over the next few years.
Good.
Yeah, there were some Twitter conversations that we were all tagged in where people were very skeptical of the acquisition. Yes. And the detour on the location data I thought was really odd. That was like a really specific thing that people zeroed in on. And I was like, that's not my immediate thought. But my immediate thought was that, so Russell, you said that, part of the acquisition, the original team's still running things, everything, but you have a new CEO. Owen Grover is now the CEO of the new Pocket Cast company. And I saw a bunch of articles and kind of statements about not pursuing advertising as monetization and the maintaining the permissions and all the location stuff. But so what is the long-term business plan then? I mean, we just joked about, I would have paid you $9 a month for that, for the web service, right? So how much of Owen Grover coming on board as CEO, steering you guys, like how much of pressure is there to start turning a profit and driving towards monetization? And how do you even do that if you want an open platform and you're not going to harvest and sell location data and things like that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So the thing people assume, I think they've seen a lot of Wall Street style movies where a CEO gets installed and suddenly that CEO is like, they're evil and they're going to take down the company. We actually selected Owen. So the partners got together and they said, hey, look, we think you need someone who has experience in areas that you potentially don't. So in growing out a business to be bigger, in scaling up to hire more people. And they were right. We don't have a lot of experience in that regard. And so they said, here's a bunch of candidates. We want you to interview them all and just tell us, which one you prefer. If you don't like any of them, we'll go and find more candidates. It's fine. So we went through the whole process and we selected Owen simply because he comes from a digital background that's originally from iHeartRadio, but he has a lot of experience in growing companies and sort of managing the digital side of things and in the whole business relationships sort of area as well. So potentially if you want to work with like a Twit or other podcasters out there, you need someone sort of managing that side of things. And if we want to launch something new, we can say, hey, look, here's Owen, talk to Owen, like here's the sort of deals we can set up and things like that. So he's really managing that side of things. His job is not to come in and change the product. So these are really weird titles. We had to pick titles. So I'm Chief Product Officer, as weird as that sounds. I'm still in charge of the product. Phil is Chief Technical Officer. So I guess our job is the development and the product direction. And his job is more the business relationship stuff. And to answer your question, Ron, how are we going to make money if it's not harvesting your data? There are tons of different ways to make money. I mean, as we proved, simply selling an app into the store is one successful way to make money. Potentially, there are others as well. If we can figure out I guess some way to help authors and sort of listeners get together a bit closer and potentially find other ways to monetize their content, then there could be a small amount of money we could make in there. There's a whole bunch of things. I guess our initial focus is on growing and scaling the platform, and we're going to worry about the money side of things, further down the track. We have some plans there that I can't sort of talk about yet, but none of them are to do with advertising or anything else sort of shady like that. Like, there's not going to be display ads in Pocket Cast. We're not going to be like an ad network that sort of dynamically inserts ads in or anything like that. We've got some other ideas for things we can do. And these are things that me as a listener, I actually approve of. Like, a lot of the other things, like, I'll put up with advertising because it pays for my podcast. I'm quite happy with that relationship. But I don't want like unskippable ads, and I don't want sort of anything intrusive. And, you know, the things that we're working on are definitely on the non-intrusive side. It's just what can we do to, you know, get podcasters more money while at the same time, you know, building out the, you know, podcasting platform. And the things we want to do are, I guess, are open ecosystem type things. So where we do potentially build things, we'd like to have an API. We'd like other apps and services to plug into that API. We definitely don't want it to be that the only place you can do something is inside Pocket Cast. Like, I think if we do that, we've lost something about the open nature of podcasting. Hmm.
So, you know, if you put a 3 in front of product, you would be C3PO. I just want to put that out there.
A. I love it.
B. Just want to put that out there. B. Russell, I wanted to ask you, what about like creators? I mean, is there like, where are like independent podcasters coming into this play? If you can talk about that at all.
I can, yeah. So this is the interesting thing is that, you know, the four companies that purchased us are very sort of big radio networks in the US. That that's a world I'm not really familiar with. Obviously, my accent gives it away. I'm from Australia. It's something we don't have here. So our focus is very much on, the independent sort of creators that are out there and finding ways to help them monetize. Because, I mean, you know the situation, Flo. You have a podcast that has a certain amount of listeners and you want to monetize it. And you're like, well, hang on. My one option here is I can approach advertisers or I can join some kind of a network. Like I know you're on Relay FM and you know, they sell the ad inventory. That's two ways you can sort of make money on a podcast. What if there are other ways? And I can't talk about those ways just yet, which I know is super frustrating. That annoys me as well. But potentially, what if there are other ways to, you know, sell your content or sell memberships to your content or, you know, potentially sell, you know, other things directly to your listeners and things that they want to be sold. I'm not talking about, you know, popping up marketing in their face or anything like that. But what if there was some kind of relationship that you could establish there where, you know, they're happy to give you money, you're happy to take their money, and you're making money making a podcast. I mean, that's the dream, right?
Yeah. I've really seen podcasting take off kind of like in the little Hollywood circle, or what I'm assuming is the Hollywood circle. Not even Hollywood, just people, comedians in LA. Like there's little networks mm-hmm. around there. And I listen to a couple of those podcasts, and kind of the way that those people have made money is by doing live shows. And so I've just, I've come to learn that like if you want to do podcasting big time, you got to start selling out venues. But not all of us have that capacity to sell out venues. And you know, I'm not a comedian. I'm just a lowly tech journalist.
Yeah. And it's challenging.
I'm like Accenture. You got to pick a really small venue to start with, and then you sell out.
Very small club.
Flow sold out. The venue is like the headline, right? And there might have only been 20 people there, but you sold out the entire venue. And then you go to the next venue and you're like, the last place I was sold out, like within 2 hours.
But no, but it's a really good point because it is super challenging because as somebody who's been podcasting for, Jesus, what's the math? 2005, so 13 years,
it's a long
right?
time, yeah.
You know, like with my brothers over at iFanboy, we have over 900 episodes in our feed, right? And that's and we've experimented with doing sponsors, you know, getting sponsors to come on board. You know, now I'm getting into dynamic ad insertion and having, you know, kind of being able to figure out how to monetize that feed and all that sort of stuff. And unless you are, you know, like, you know, Marc Maron or you're with Earwolf or these other kind of big, you know, like the whole Stitcher mid-roll conglomerate that's been growing is really kind of, you know, like it's really great for podcasting, but it's also really kind of deafening. And when you're an independent podcaster, and then you see Apple come in and, you know, announce they're going to, you know, roll out metrics and turn the whole industry upside down and ultimately have no effect, you know, like, so it's just, you know, like, I think there's so many cards stacked against independent creators that it's nice that, you know, a conglomerate of public radio can get behind an independent app. And Russell, you work to kind of help to promote that because, you know, keeping podcasting, that's what's great about podcasting. It was open. Like the whole paywall model really scares me because that's not what podcasting is.
I am paying now 2 more memberships per month so that I can get some special bonus content from some people that I really admire through social media. But I can't keep doing that because like I'm running out of money.
Yeah, and you know, and Patreon helps, and other ways help. But it's if this helps PocketCast help independent creators figure out how to, you know, keep their heads above water, then all more power to it.
I would love to give $5 towards like the person, you know, mm-hmm. rather than like anyway. Now we're just talking about what.
Yeah, we're just talking about podcasting. Yeah.
I'm just taking out notes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. One final note. In all of this, I think it's probably the most important point of all. Don't change the change logs. Please keep going with your change logs.
Please. We need something in the Play Store because everything else is just... I mean, look, developers aren't getting as much money from the Play Store as they do in the Apple Store. Oh, so you got to give us something.
Because the change logs are so much better on iOS. It's not bug fixes and performance improvement.
It is. Yeah, I need to see some charts.
For those that are wondering, I actually write those. And I can't help myself. I'm going to keep writing those. So
all right, good. Good. All right, that's what I wanted to hear. Right on. Well, Russell, again, congratulations. It's awesome that you were in a position, not that you had to take a deal, but it really seems like it was the right deal to come along. And I can speak for myself. I'm very curious and stoked to see what you guys come up with as a result of it. So thank you. And thanks for hopping on to talk about everything else, because we've got hardware coming up next, which is where we're going to go right now, Victor. I realize I threw that really fast, so I'll give you time. All right.
So if anybody was checking the internets today, apparently there was a phone launch happening.
Did we see this coming? Did we know that this was coming, or was this a surprise announcement? Because I feel like it took me by surprise.
Okay, I have to be completely honest with everybody here. I'm still thinking about the last HTC phone.
Oh, was it the HTC
U11? The U11. But today we're talking about the HTC U12. Actually, the U12 Plus.
Yes.
U12 Plus, which actually there's been a little bit of buzz about it because of that that back.
The translucent back.
Yeah, which looks really
That's cool.
Yeah, I like that.
It looks really cool, but it looks unlike any other phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it just is in its own.
That's a good thing.
Yes,
you know
that
how much I like
thing.
That. Yeah, that's great. That's really cool.
Yeah, I like that.
So this is a metal frame. It's got this quote-unquote liquid metal design, not like our dear Super Mario, though the blue version is partially translucent, so that's why you get kind of that cool effect on the back. Very iMac-y. Buttons on the sides aren't actually buttons. They're pressure-sensitive. And they have haptic feedback as well, which kind of keeps in line with what HTC's been doing
with the squeezable thing.
And of course, we have that on the Pixel 2 as well, which is manufactured.
Mm-hmm. I have mine turned off, but yes.
Oh, I have mine turned on. I like it. I like the squeeze mechanism. I'm into it. This phone's got a 6-inch Quad HD Super LCD 6 display with HDR 10 and an 18:9 aspect ratio, which is what we're getting a lot from phones these days. But good news, everyone, there's no notch on this. So you're getting the 18:9, but you don't have to deal with any notches. So there you go. There's also dual rear-facing 12-megapixel cameras with optical image stabilization and an f over 1.75 aperture. So it'll be good for the low lights. Dual front-facing cameras for selfie effects, because what phone is a phone without selfie effects? Because if you're not blurring out my face, honey, the real world ain't. That's for sure. Also inside a Snapdragon 845. Processor, 6 gigs of RAM, 64 or 128 gigs of storage, a 3500 milliamp battery pack, no headphone jack, sorry, USB-C, IP68 rated, Bluetooth 5, improved edge sense that detects which hand you are holding with for device control.
Okay, so that probably ties into those side controls somehow. I don't know.
I'm going to be very curious to see how left-handers feel about this phone, actually. So we should find a professional left-hander to help us.
How left-handed are you?
How left-handed are you? Are you like ambidextrous or like you only rely on your left hand? Because we need somebody like the latter.
Like someone in the left-hand Olympics.
Yeah.
We need to invite on the show.
Exactly. Yeah. Those left-handers. Also, it has Oreo, which is great, and Android P is promised. It is $800 for the 64 gig model, but it is not available through carriers. It is online only.
Oh, that kind of ties right in with what you were saying earlier, Ron, where you were saying HTC in the carrier stores, because that's the way they normally are. Yep. But this phone, for whatever reason, not so.
I wonder if it's related to the Google thing.
Yeah.
This is just rampant speculation, but is there some sort of limits on what they can do? You know, I don't know. Who knows?
Man, but that would kind of be a bad deal for HTC if they
did that. Yeah, that would be very bad.
I don't know why they would do that, but because Google bought a lot of it.
Sometimes you got to take that money.
But this is for fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice looking. Man, HTC is kind of the wind is out of the sails for HTC. I don't know.
Why?
Yeah, I kind of feel like that too.
Yeah.
In the early days, it was all HTC, HTC, absolutely, HTC. Yeah. And now, yeah, I mean, that translucent back is nice though. Like,
I still see M7s, by the way, on BART. HTC M1 M7s. Just people still holding on to them.
Wow.
Good phone. That was a good phone.
It was, yeah. Everybody loved that phone.
Yeah, that was a good phone.
Yeah, I still see those. And the M8s, which I still have mine. All banged up and everything.
Speaking of HTC phones, and remember I was telling you about the problem with my sister and the notification on the location services or whatever? This weekend I hung out with her again and she was complaining because she keeps her notifications on full volume in case one of my nieces texts her, right? She's got to know when her kids need her. But every 15 minutes, because she uses one of those Find My Friends app, she gets a notification that location services is picking up her location and sending it to the app. So I went into the notifications, went into the advanced panel and turned the notifications off for the Android system level location notifier.
So that she wouldn't every 15 minutes get some random
get a ding.
Every time
your location went.
Well, you saved the day then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but by no means is that user friendly.
No, not at all.
It took me like 15 minutes to figure it out.
Not at all.
But she loves her HTC phone.
Yeah, I mean,
this is a big one. I have an
affinity for HTC from what HTC was at one time, but man, I've just. Like I said, it's kind of the wind is out of the sails.
But
for
I still
HTC
have an affinity
right
for them. I just have affinity for the phones they're making for Google.
Yeah, well, I guess when
Which
you
is
put
why
it that
I was
way,
very
it's
excited
like
when
Pixel.
I heard. Yes, I was very excited when I heard they were manufacturing the Pixel because I was like, oh my god, that's what I want. I want great hardware on my carrier, which I wasn't getting from HTC.
Yeah,
I wonder.
And a great camera, which Google has helped.
That's true. I guess HTC has proven it can do some great things. We love our Pixels here on the show, as everyone that writes into emails us reminds us how much we talk about our Pixels.
To be fair, they are good phones.
Yeah, exactly.
But the specs on this sound really nice.
It does.
It sounds like a really, like if you are a fan and you are on a network that will accept the bands, you should check it out maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's $800. It's like, less than a Samsung phone. Right?
Yeah, that's right on par with the S9, I would say.
Yeah. You know, it's a 6-inch phone, so it's pretty big.
It's their flagship, so.
You know,
it's pretty big. And it's got the kind of drippy back look that we saw in the HTC U11. I think Burke had that phone for a while, and he detested it for whatever that's worth. If you follow all of Burke's recommendations, then that's what you should know about the U11.
And what is Burke using now?
What is he using now? A Pixel?
A blue Pixel.
Yeah.
Yes. Made by HTC.
So I guess we'll wait and see. I would love to play around with this phone and test it and put it through its paces. I feel like on one hand, like I get where HTC was coming from, peeling it back. You know, they sold a portion of their business, obviously, to Google, and that's probably going to be good news for Google as we kind of can, you know, end up in the hardware segment of the year from Google. We'll kind of find out the beginnings of what that goes into. As far as HTC, the company, is concerned with their smartphones, I really feel like I understand their reasons for doing it, but I wonder if by stripping things down so far, they remove themselves from from that mind share, from the public mind share, and they become less and less known, you know, as a result of that. I don't know.
So on the video feed, we're looking at the colors, which are translucent blue, ceramic black, and flame red. And I just want to call out the flame red. It looks very nice.
Does look very nice.
Those are some good colors, man.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I dig this announcement.
Color's a big deal right now with the phones. We're seeing lots of different types of colors. I love it.
Good. Good.
HMD Global is updating some of last year's Nokia handsets, or some of you correct me and say Nokia. Nokia is what I say. 5.1, the Nokia 5.1 now has a 5.5-inch HD Plus display, fingerprint sensor moved to the back, 2 gigahertz MediaTek octa-core, a couple of different memory and storage configurations, still aluminum with a curved glass design. That's going to be around €189 in July, which is roughly around $218 here in the U.S., starting up to €219. For the decked out version, which has more memory and more storage, that sort of stuff. But they also announced the Nokia 3.1. This apparently was their most, the three anyways, was the most successful model in their lineup to date. So they're kind of taking, you know, what they announced a year ago and updating them at this point. 5.2 inch HD 18:9 display, 1.5 gigahertz MediaTek octa-core processor, again, two or three gigs of RAM, 16 or 32 gigs of storage. An increase in the camera up to 13 megapixels on the rear-facing camera, up from 8 megapixel. This is an Android One device, so you're going to get, you know, that kind of stock approach. You're going to get monthly security updates for up to for 3 years.
I was going
to
say it looks like a Pixel from the interface photos, yeah, with the icon and the bezels. It looks like a Pixel too.
Yeah, yeah, it looks nice. June for 139 euros to start, around $160 US, and then the Nokia 2, which is the 5.5-inch HD display, Snapdragon 425. This is targeting emerging markets specifically. 2 gigs of RAM, 8 gigs of storage, micro SD card slot, which you're going to need with 8 gigs of storage. But again, this is running Android Go. That's going to save on space and resource, that sort of stuff. It does have a 4,000 milliamp hour battery, so a lot of battery in there. July for around $115 in emerging markets.
$115?
Yeah. That's
very affordable.
Yeah.
What's up? You know what else? I was sitting in the cinema here in Australia the other day watching the new Star Wars movie, and there was literally a Nokia ad that came up, and it was trading on that whole, remember how cool the 3310 was and how like industrial robust it was, and you know, it helped you out so many times when you had to call people. Here's the new Nokia, and an Android One logo like even flashed across the screen. Like, I thought that was really interesting to see that in Australia, where we don't tend to get a lot of ads for phones that are sort of outside the carriers. Like, this was just a Nokia ad and nothing else, which was kind of cool.
Was Nokia a big brand in Australia?
Yeah, they were huge.
And I mean, that's,
I think, you know, basically like almost every phone you saw back then was either a Sony Ericsson or a Nokia, and Nokia was winning by, I think, a huge margin over here.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that in Romania too.
Yeah, I mean, the HMD global acquisition, we were very curious, like, to see how this would play out over time, and here we are. I mean, we got to be about a year later, and so far so good. I think the general impression of the Nokia Android phones that have come out have been pretty positive.
Okay, yeah. So a year from now, we're going to have all these really great emerging market phones running Android One, right? Mm-hmm. So they all look really nice interface-wise, and they're getting their software updates. And then we're going to have some really high premium toy phones. I'm going to call them toy phones. The phones, it's like having a Beamer for the weekends, if you can afford that sort of thing for just the weekends, which that's crazy. But it's like your nice car. It's like the thing, right? It's like, oh, yeah, you get the HTC U12 Plus and you go, look, I have something nobody else has and it does these things. And then you got the everybody else's phones.
The everybody else phone.
Which are the Pixels and the Samsungs.
Yeah, but be different, not the same. Wasn't that the...
That was the Android. I was like, where did that come from? Because I haven't heard it in so long.
That was the Android marketing campaign.
That was the Android marketing campaign.
Those cool commercials. Well, speaking of Pixel and be different in Google, mm-hmm, so the Pixel 3 is getting some discussion, as there was a quote-unquote leak, actually with a lot of people questioning whether it's legit or not, but you know how much we love these leaks. So let's get into it. So Screen Protector is posted on Twitter claiming to be from the upcoming smartphones. Okay, so that's where the leak came from. And the Pixel 3 XL shows a notch, and both the Pixel 3 and XL show dual front-facing cameras, or perhaps an opening for other sensors. The original poster of the image vanished. No background info is available, so question the source. But then people took it one step further and analyzed the shadowy design hiding behind the smaller Pixel 3. Questioning whether is that proof of a third Pixel 3 design? Dun, dun, dun. People also look at these screen protectors and created renders of the phones themselves. And it's all fun and games. That's all you need to know.
People just go for it. I love it. This is a screen protector. I'm going to render it and make it. You're going to know exactly.
Go for it.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, but if you... So where is the picture that they're talking about? I think it's linked to... Yeah, so if you zoom in on the bottom left Cool. Well, I guess that kind of shows the progression because they're increasing the contrast so you can see. But if you see the two obvious frames, the one on the left is sitting on top of a faded frame in the background, and they're saying, well, wait a minute, maybe that's a third design that was like underneath the sheet.
What's funny is that I saw Bigfoot running through the Pacific Northwest carrying the third pixel design.
So. Did it have a notch?
Yeah, it had a notch.
So. Okay.
Hey,
what?
You know what Bigfoot can teach all of us?
What?
Never leave any trail behind or mess behind.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
In your local state parks and beaches, please clean up for each other and yourselves.
Do we think that there's any actual reality here?
No. But can everyone please stop complaining about the chin? Who cares if there's a chin? No, somebody's going to get mad at me for saying that.
Well, yeah, a chin is fine.
I like a chin.
If there's something there.
I like a chin on my phone. I like a chin on my phone. There you go.
Yeah.
Not only that, but for those of you who use the iPhone X with no chin, they just basically do nothing with that bottom space. They're like, this is unusable space, so we're just going to leave like this screen down there. When you watch a video, you can see it. But otherwise, it's just completely unusable interface space. I'm like, I don't see the point.
So it's kind of a waste.
Mostly
have it down there. Even though I would say
it does look good, though it does look good.
Right, exactly. It's a purely aesthetic choice. This is the future that Ron is pushing for, right? The all glass front, top to bottom, side to side. This is Ron's future.
I want a bezel-less phone, man. I want it. I want the Expanse phone.
I love how they're drawing lines to measure the depth of the notch, how it compares. Oh boy, people love these things, and we love talking about it, apparently.
Well, you know, it's fun. It's like ghost hunting, except instead of hunting ghosts, which, by the way, way more dangerous than this because you don't know what kind of things you're going to wake up. It's a little more fun.
You played with a Ouija board in your day, didn't you?
I would never do that.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No, that's so dangerous. I can't bring that into my life.
Okay.
I refuse. But Flows we are going to... we are gonna bring some help though to a fellow viewer / listener.
We'll try.
This one's from Michael. Michael says, Michael asks, I have a question about the new OnePlus 6 cell phone. Will the OnePlus 6 fully support the new bands that T-Mobile recently acquired? If not, what are they missing to work? So
the answer is yes.
Yes.
All right, moving on.
The answer is yes. There's a 600.
Let's see here. So it's the 600 megahertz, 71 band. It's okay. It's okay. So
sorry,
a little bit of background. T-Mobile bought $8 billion worth of spectrum. You may remember this from last year. It's in the process of rolling it out. And essentially, it offers coverage with greater reach as one piece, but another piece that's really great for T-Mobile users. If you've been on T-Mobile, you know that the penetration into buildings sometimes is not very good. And apparently this new band will help that a lot. So the Pixel 2 apparently doesn't support it. The Galaxy S9, the LG V30 do, just to name a few. But by the end of the year, T-Mobile phones will support this band entirely.
It's all very phones, confusing.
All phones on the network will have to support the 71 band. So yes, the OnePlus 6 does support the 71 band, and that's good news. It'll work inside buildings. Isn't that neat?
Meanwhile,
our Pixel 2.
Yeah, I just want to say I was a fan of that band before it was cool, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, now everybody's jumping on the 71 bandwagon.
It's sold out.
Yes. Right. We got a groan on the show.
Groan.
Collective groan.
Collective groan. All right, it's time for some apps. Okay, so at Google I.O., there was an announcement about Google Lens and how it was being updated and to be better and neater and all those things. I wonder if it'll work on today's Oreo pick, but I'm going to show it off. So basically, what does the new Google Lens actually do? It's like real-time scanning. So I'm going to open up Assistant and hit the little Google Lens button. And now you can see these little flying dots all around. That means that it's actively scanning this whatever happens to be in front of the camera. I didn't try this before with the Oreo, but you can see the little dot that appeared over the Oreo. It recognized something, and it's using AR Core, as far as I know, because it's locked onto the object.
Interesting.
And I'll tap it, and then it'll pull up. It's not doing nearly that great of a suggestion, saying it might be one of these. Is it an Oreo? And yes, it's an Oreo, and it'll look for results. And hey, there's the Oreo logo. That wasn't very impressive. But I didn't bring anything. Oh, give me your Pellegrino cup. I bet that'll work. Let's see here. All right, let's see. I was doing this in my living room, and it pretty closely identified my couch, even though my couch is really old. All right, so Pellegrino. Let's see.
Where's your couch from?
I can't remember. It's so old, I can't even remember. All right, so it's picked up a couple of different things. I'm not really quite sure. San Pellegrino, okay. Great. It's kind of doing
here,
the
try
same
my
thing.
Ring.
That's
here,
a good
I have
one.
A stone.
Okay.
I have a this is a watermelon tourmaline, so see if it knows what it is.
Okay.
That's going to be interesting.
Come on, recognize a ring. Pop-Tarts. Come on. You can do it. It's a special ring. Come on.
What if you
on.
Hold it?
Now I could tap it, and it will say, looks like a ring.
Yes,
and
but what's the stone?
That's really nice. Thanks for letting me know that. Okay, Burke brought out a Pop-Tart.
I need my ring back. Sorry, I love this ring.
Oh.
And?
Wow.
No. Okay.
That looks like a yummy Pop-Tart, though.
Okay,
now
what else?
It.
Next. Clorox. Clorox wipes. Oh, I got something. What is it giving me? Oh, there we go.
Oh, now it's giving you shopping.
It actually worked, you guys. Similar products. Clorox disinfecting wipes. It recognized it. I could tap it, I think, and it'll take me to buy it. Isn't that amazing? It just works every single not quite time. Let's see if it works on this random thing that's been in the studio.
Oh shucks! I should have grabbed some makeup or something. Ever.
I love that can, man. Let me tell you.
Yeah, that can's not.
I still have mine.
Okay. Oh, I thought you this wanted me real, to show the game. Okay.
Oh, that's meta.
What phone is this? Oh, sorry, I backed away too far. Okay, what phone is this? I don't have to ask. Why is it not working? Fine. I think I confused it now. It doesn't want to work anymore.
It's like if you're training a puppy.
I like how a mode in new Google Lens is this that's overwhelmed.
It's like I don't know it anymore.
I need a moment.
Yeah, it's not even doing the live scanning anymore. Like it doesn't even have those little blinky blink things on. Here, let me try it one more time. Okay, we'll jump into it. Oh, there we go. Okay, will it know that this is a Pixel? It identified something. And an HP Elite book.
Elite book.
All right, so it needs work. It needs some work.
To be fair, the machine sees the keys, and the keys that are on the Pixel book are keys that are on various other laptops. So at least it suggested laptop.
At least it knew it was a keyboard. I did this at home with my MacBook Pro, just the keyboard, and it recognized it as a MacBook Pro keyboard.
But it didn't, that's maddening.
Yeah. But it doesn't on its own computer. It doesn't on Google's own computer.
It's maddening.
Yeah. All right. So it needs work.
Does it recognize the Google logo?
Apparently not. No. Let me try and do one last thing here, which is that it can actually take text and make it.
Oh, wow.
Now
you can select that text, right?
I should be able to.
Stop.
I should be able to.
What? Oh, yeah, I love this. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Copy. Translate. So you could do this on written words and turn it into selectable, copyable, pastable, all that stuff.
Or if you need to send something to a family member, off of a physical, off of a physical piece of equipment, then you can do that. It's very helpful.
Sure. So there you go. Google Lens redesigned with real world, real time scanning, and your mileage may vary, obviously.
Fascinating.
But anyways, it's part of Assistant, so that update should roll out to you soon. All right, Ron, you got the next one.
I do get the next one. So YouTube Music Gate continues.
Clarification. Clarification.
Those of you who are playing along at home, last week we talked about the new YouTube Music, the much ballyhooed and anticipated. Google confirmed to The Verge that YouTube Music will indeed be bringing in all of Google Play Music's major features, and this includes the user upload library. So those of us who have our entire libraries that we migrated from iTunes up to Google, fear not, it's still going to be there. And apparently the plan is to move all Google Play Music users over to YouTube Music sometime in 2019. In the meantime, all key features will be brought over in transition. And Jason, I wanted to come down on you because you were skeptical of the Google Play Music. You thought there was more to it. I took Google at their word when they said Google Play Music isn't going anywhere, but as you pointed out, going anywhere yet. So it looks like the plan is to migrate everybody to YouTube Music, which I don't know how I feel about it, but we'll see.
Yeah, we're all going over. But this isn't the new redesign. I keep checking the YouTube Music app because I want to play around with the new redesign, and this is not it.
Although Despacito I might just have to
listen to Despacito. Keep in mind, my music library is not my music library anymore. I had kids. And that changed. Okay.
Sorry, that's why I brought that up, because I knew that pretty much everything been blasting you see that here lately, is, and it's a fun dance song. So,
it is. So you know, they love it.
I get it.
Yeah.
You
anyways,
know, I was obsessed with LaBouche.
With what? What?
Be my lover, wanna.
Oh,
be
oh,
oh,
oh.
Hi, guys. Where have you been?
I forgot about that song. Not in the 90s, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, you got the next one.
So I've actually been wanting to try this out myself, but I haven't done it because I'm afraid to try new things. It's just the way that I am. Grasshopper by Google's Area 120 is an app to help teach beginning coders the fundamentals of coding. So if you have time and you feel led to do this, well, maybe this is something you're going to be interested in. So this was first released in April, but it's cool. So let's highlight it. Let's talk about it for a little bit. So basically, this app offers, it's made by Google, and it offers games, puzzles, quizzes, and all sorts of activities to kind of help teach you JavaScript, which is what a great way to learn JavaScript versus buying JavaScript for dummies, right? That was the way everybody used to learn it back in the day. It's meant for true beginners, so people like me who have never done anything, which I actually have done a couple things Java, but nothing really like this. Puzzles will help show you what you should end up with when the code is running the right way, and then kind of helps you step through it and learn how to construct it. So exactly the way that you would learn how to build something, which is here's deconstruct it to figure out how it works and then recreate it again kind of thing. So Jason's going to show us a demo.
Well, I'm trying.
Live although coding.
The earlier demo, the kind of earlier tutorials were a lot easier than this, and I didn't preview this beforehand. So I'm going to prove how confused I get really quickly with coding. So this is what I need to end up with up here. And this is as far as the code that's already there takes you, as far as I can tell here. So draw boxes. GGG, green, 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 I'm assuming. Drawbox, Y for yellow. New line, and I need to go blue. So drawbox is, oh, I see. Y. Why?
Why?
Why? Why did I do this? Oh,
and
string.
This is
oh.
Why I ran away the other
why?
Direction.
Very wise.
Why?
Yes.
Okay, can I delete
yes.
this one then? Because I don't need it. Right?
Oh, look at that.
But that's
now you got to press play maybe to get it to update.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Anyway, the crux of this app is it's an app made by Google to help you sort of get the fundamentals of JavaScript coding. I just want to point it out that this is another way that Google makes these things accessible to people. I feel like a lot of what Google does is Google tries to really empower.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. See, they give you that positive feedback to really empower you to feel like you can do it. And you, too, can create your very own application for the Google Play Store. For
I did
to use
it.
On their Android devices and other things.
There's
maybe.
There's a lot of these up here, too.
Well, you got a lot to learn. It's like learning a language. It is a language. And there are fundamentals to every language.
Yeah, there's a ton of challenges through here. And you learn JavaScript.
Exactly. Well, now that you did that, though, it kind of helped me. You know, it's like taking your friend with you to a yoga class to help you kind of figure out what it's like, and then you'll go by yourself. So now I feel you walked me through that
now
so that I could build some, you know, confidence to try it on my own. So thank you.
Good.
Thank you
Good.
For that.
I'm happy. You should install it. It's really easy to use. And
it looks...
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
It's material design.
It's neat. I like it. All right. And finally, we have an email from Randy K., faithful listener through Pocket Casts over Android Auto, by the way.
Thank you, Randy K.
Randy says, I've heard, understand, and agree with Jason's concerns about migrating your music to the new YouTube Music, but I have a concern of my own that I have not heard addressed. That is compatibility with Android Auto. YouTube Music does not show up there. I've read that the concern is the obvious safety issue surrounding playing video on your car's screen, but I believe it is imperative for Google to figure out a way to allow audio-only compatibility for Android Auto. For me, to not offer that would be a deal-breaker. I have to imagine that they'd do that. If they put all of their eggs in the YouTube Music basket and removed Google Play Music, like they'd have to make it so that that would work in an audio-only facility. So maybe they're not there yet. Maybe you haven't received the updated app, which I don't think really anyone has at this point. And if they have, not very, very many people have. So maybe once that change comes through, that addresses it or that's a future update. Really Google bad. Likes to do the future update thing. And so you might be waiting for a while on that one. But there you go.
That's not good.
Yeah.
That's really not good.
Yeah, I love that it's 2018 and they still haven't figured out how to do an announcement. They're like, there's new things coming. It's going to be awesome. And everyone's like, oh, cool. I go to the, oh, I can't get it from the store next week, maybe. 7 days. I don't understand. And then you just, so we spend the next 3 weeks talking about, like, where is this app that they promised us? And eventually it lands. And I feel like that kind of kills some of the buzz, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You tell people there's something cool, give them the cool thing.
Absolutely kills the buzz. If you know, if you got this new big monumental shift in your music strategy and yet no one can get in there, like,
or
yeah, some
people
will just move on.
Which is where people listen to music and podcasts most of the time, which is where I listen to a lot of music and podcasts is in the car.
Yeah.
You know, and that's very unsafe. And you know what? People are not going to stop from using it in the car just because it's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So they're just going to leave it on.
Yeah, figure out some way around it.
And just, you know, but then you have, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's
obviously very frustrating.
It is. I want safety in the car.
Yeah.
Unsafety.
Absolutely.
As you should,
You know?
Randy K did say that if you look in the forums, you can encourage, you are encouraged to contact Google support to request this feature. He says, I've done that. I hope that with a mention on the show, the AAA Army will do their part too.
Yeah, that's
a good. We actually have some.
What's that?
We have some contacts on the Android Auto team. Maybe we should ping some of them and find out. But I'm with you, Jason. I can't imagine that they haven't thought of this, and it's probably just coming in an update, I would have thought, because they can still play your video stuff as audio. Like, that's not a big deal.
Right, right.
Like, we do that already in Pocket Cast, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, and with that, it's time to battle it out, the epic battle that is the Android Arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Last
a sore loser. I don't want to talk about last
week. All right, so we're not going to talk about it. Anyways, today's apps are... No, we're going to talk about it, of course.
I'm just telling you I'm sore about it.
Oh, well, I haven't even seen the results yet. I'm looking at them right now.
I'm sore about it.
Twit.to/AAApoll 370. And it looks like navigation gestures, 43%.
Of course,
you had to know when Michelle brought this in.
Yeah.
The XDA Army was going to jump on that.
It's fair.
Fair enough. Navigation gestures, 43% first place. Gas Buddy, second place, 33%.
Nice.
Everybody looking for a Gas Buddy. third place, Briar at 13%. And fourth place, Siempo at 12%.
That's fine. I'm enjoying my simple life.
Well, that simple life has brought you 38 points after 21 weeks, Lowe. And you're currently in fourth. Jason, you're in third with 45 points. Climbing, getting back
slowly,
on the horse.
Slowly.
I'm still in second with 58 points, and the guests are in first place with 60 points. So, Russell, no pressure. representing the first place guests team. There you go.
That's right. Guest rule, host rule. Is that how it works?
So, like, yes, I think that's exactly
definitely
that's
me.
What it is.
Yeah.
Let's see here. So, what does that mean? Does that mean that I'm the returning winner, so I go first?
You're the returning winner. No, you're so you go last.
Yeah,
Flo's the loser, so she goes first.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Sorry.
It should be, Flo, me, Russell, you.
I'm getting confused. I had it right the first time.
371 episodes, and it's like the first time every time.
It's so late in the evening, Ron. It's 6:30. It's so late.
I don't know how.
All right, Flo, you're up first.
Okay. What do we have here? So today I was on the internet, as I usually am. And I saw Lifehacker mentioned this app, so I thought I would bring it to the arena today because it's funny and it's interesting and it offers apparently, if you pay the annual subscription of, what is it, $4, you can get weather, it's a weather app, and you can get all the way, like, back to, like, 70 years ago, the weather report.
Oh.
But here's the really fun part about this. So this app is called Carrot Weather. And it was mentioned on Lifehacker today. So I guess this was a really popular app on iOS. Now, this says unreleased in the Play Store, but I think you can download it if you're okay with the fact that it's unstable. So if you don't feel weird about that, I don't feel weird about it. I just, whatever, go for it. It might be entertaining for you, maybe for a second. Okay. All right. So as you can see, this is why this weather app is really giving people something to talk about, because it's snarky. And not only is it snarky, apparently it's also snarky about current events.
Yeah. A little political.
Which definitely makes it interesting. So this is the weather in Petaluma. We've got a really nice graphical user interface here. also referred to as GUI by some people. Uh-huh. And they're really cute. You've got a little, like, whatever dude here, and you've got the weather, and you can slide over and see what the weather is going to be like tomorrow.
Beautiful. Actually, it's
you've got
colder?
No active alerts, which is boring. It says on the bottom here, if I turn it down. you can time travel. So, Mr. Howell,
yeah.
Where would you like to go?
November 5th, 1955.
Is that really where you want to go? All right. We're going to go there.
Oops. I'll be curious to see if anything is.
Yeah. So the thing about this is if you pay for it, you can't actually go back in time. And I'm paying for it right now.
Great Scott!
All right, we're gonna.
Oh, please show something.
Oh wow!
She just said, "Can we make a quick pit stop in 1984 so I can kill John Connor?"
Dang.
See, now if these developers were cool, they would have picked up on that date and done something related to that date.
That's especially fair.
Considering that icon next to the settings icon looks like a flux capacitor icon.
It does.
It's a spaceship, yeah. I think, because it's like time travel.
Is that a flux capacitor?
Oh, yeah, it does look like a flux.
Tap it. Is it tappable?
This is the time travel one.
It is a flux capacitor.
Wow.
It all makes sense now.
Dang. Wow, we went the long way for that one.
Wow. We really pick up on the dates. What's up with that?
That's weird that they would have the one thing but not
try doing October 21st.
Okay. Let's do it. So we're going to go to October 21st.
October 21st, 2015.
Yes. Okay, so it goes back to 1948, for those of you wondering. 2015, we're almost there.
Let's go see if your mom was hot back when she was in high school.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, all right. That's somewhat related. There we go.
Jeez, Louise. It was 74 degrees 3 years ago.
Okay.
On this day.
All right.
You've got settings over here. So the nice thing about this is I love Dark Sky. I actually brought it into the arena a couple months back. I love it so much. I already pay for it annually. But now I'm just going to give, I guess, the money here. And I still get all of the data from Dark Sky, which I found to be some of the most accurate weather data I've ever used, quite frankly. It's just, whoa, apparently you could change the personality. I just found this. So personality goes from friendly, snarky, homicidal to overkill, which includes profanity, which I'm not going to do on this show.
Yeah,
this is a family show.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
We've also, you can also choose the politics of your...
Really?
Yes.
What does that
this
mean?
Is interesting. It can be apolitical if you like.
Okay.
Or can you make it? Can you make it super political?
You can make it liberal.
Oh, that's
conservative,
crazy.
Centrist, libertarian. Which I'm very curious. What is that like? Anyway, apolitical. If you want, I'm going to leave it on centrist.
Good idea.
Because we're just going to leave it there. You know, this is just a fun app, and it's $4 a year for really great weather results. I mean, these are the same weather results that are routed through from Dark Sky, which I already trust and I really like. And it's just, it's...
So it's like just, Dark Sky with an attitude.
Whoa.
It's fracking springtime.
It's fracking springtime.
Yeah.
It really is, because it's 73 degrees outside. Nice. So, and it's 6:30 outside. So there you go. Carrot.
Cool. Carrot weather.
Carrot weather.
And free, $4 a year if you choose to pay. Although I think I saw someone in chat say, while it's unreleased.
There are ads if you don't pay for it, but you do get the basic weather functionality. If you do pay the $4 a year, you get the time travel capability as well as the widget, which is a customizable widget you can put on your home screen so you can see what the description in the Play Store says, what awful weather Carrot sent your way without having to open the app.
Oh. Nice.
So.
Cheery.
Yes.
Carrot weather. Check it out for yourself. Let's see here. Ron, you are up next, and I have yours installed.
I would like to preface this that when I picked my app this morning, I did not connect who was going to be on the show. So, Russell, I still love Pocket Cast. but I thought this is really interesting. And normally, I'll give you an advanced criticism. This app is a beta or unreleased app. So it's early on, and it actually lacks, you're going to see a couple of things that it lacks that I think are key to it, but it definitely lays the groundwork for an interesting take on a podcast player. It's called Voce, V-O-C-E, Voce podcast player. And basically what it is, and this is my criticism of it, it's only limited to these five podcasts currently. And if you tap under subscriptions, Jason, you can, not subscriptions, go to Discover and then on the lower left and then Coming Soon. They have shows that they are taking votes from people to say what they want the next one to be added to the app. The reason why there isn't just a general search and you can't add any podcast to it and why they're limiting the shows are is because what this is that this is, they're calling Voce enabled, and it's, interactive and tied to a timeline show notes. So if you tap on revision and just tap on that, if you scroll up through the timeline, as the show plays, it highlights and provides links and information to things that are discussed on the show.
Hey,
so it's
me.
So yeah, there it is. Look at that.
Wait a minute.
What a coincidence. Wait a minute.
It's, and your picture makes it seem like you knew all along.
Well, this is that you're on the Fragmented Android Developer Podcast,
yes.
Right? So,
yes.
So shocking. You know, there you go.
With friends of the show, Russell. And yeah. Chuki, who was on a couple of weeks ago, and future guest in a couple of weeks, Huyen, and yes, and so much more.
Nice. So, but anyway, let's back away from the Android one. But if you go to Revisionist History, actually go to Discover and tap on Revisionist History. Just tap on the podcast Revisionist History, and then tap on the Basement Tapes. Right. And so if you scroll up, you can see. So you know, early in the show, he mentions the Volvo S90. There's a link to that. Mentions Robert P. Franz. So they're going through and they are adding interactive show notes, which is really kind of interesting. So there's this timeline view, but then also if you scroll up, Jason, and you hit play, and then tap on the lower, on the bottom, you don't have to listen to it. It's fine. It's just playing a podcast. You've heard that before. You see on the horizontal timeline, there are little dots. And if you swipe, those are the pictures from those same things, similar to the vertical timeline. So it's two different visual representations of the information there. And you can jump to that section. You can hear what they're saying about it. You can bookmark it. You can see more information. Or you can just get, you know, close it and hit the X button and get rid of it. So, but yeah. So Voce podcast player.
So a little bit of a criticism that you can only listen to five shows currently. But if they open this up, enable podcast creators to add in their own show notes, this could be a pretty interesting approach to podcasting. And, you know, one thing that we talked about a lot is that the podcasting app, you know, there's not a lot of room to maneuver in. And this was an interesting, innovative take that I hadn't seen yet. So, yeah, worth checking out. So
nice. That's there you go. Really cool looking feature. Definitely requires content creators to do a little bit of extra work. Right?
And I want to do some ridiculous stuff.
Well, I would like it if they opened up their authoring tools, or if you could add podcasts and just use it. You know what I mean? Like, but they're being because it's in beta, they're being really closed in terms of what podcasts, because they're clearly they're doing this authoring, right? I don't know whether they have a deal with these shows. They're just using them as guinea pig, you know, kind of test data stuff. But you know, it shows the potential of it. But it you know, as someone who's written copious show notes over the years, to do this would be even added more work. So, but it could be cool. It could be a way to give you more information from your podcast.
Absolutely,
awesome. It's free.
Yeah. Voce. Voce.
Meaning voice.
Voce.
Yes, it's in Italian.
Podcast player. Okay.
It's very good.
Russell, have you heard of this app before? Have you checked it out?
No, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. This sounds like a really cool idea. This is something that we've been exploring for a long time. Is that it's if you're listening to a show and it's really, really interesting, like everyone wants more in-depth sort of information. I like the way they've kind of presented it in that timeline-y sort of card thing. I do wonder how they're getting this, though. Do you have to manually type it in, or are they trying to have their people go through it, or what? Like, there might be some kind of scaling issue there. But
that
sounds really cool, though. I like
it. Yeah, it is neat. Yeah, so keep an eye on it. So.
Interesting stuff. All right, Russell, I have your app installed. If you want to talk about it, I'll show it off.
Yes, I've gone all corporate on you today. Sorry, Jason. Maybe I'm trying to tank the guest team. Who knows? It's going to be a very hard app to demo as well if you haven't logged in. But my choice is Twist app. And it's actually it is an Android app. It is also an iOS app and a desktop app as well. Like it's basically a service. So if any of you have ever used something like Slack before, you're fairly familiar with, you know, creating channels and messaging different people and setting up basically like a work team, or maybe like a podcasting team or whatever. You've got a group of people that you want to talk to, right? So Twist app is, I guess, a take on this from the Doist people that make Todoist. And, you know, they make good quality apps. They make some good stuff. This one I really got into because I got kind of sick of, I'm in like 12 different Slack channels, and they're all sort of taking up massive amounts of RAM on my computer, and I'm trying to develop at the same time. I'm like, I need those gigabytes back. Can I have them back? So the thing I love about these apps is they're all native to the platform that they're written on. So the Android app is an Android app. It's not like a web view. The Mac app is the same. The iOS app is the same. I think there's a Windows 10 one as well. Like, they're all really nice, high-quality apps. And it's very early days for Twist app. But if you're looking for a way to, I guess, communicate with a group of people that you want to stay in touch with and you want to categorize that communication a bit, it is really cool for that. So it's not really a chat app. Like, it's not a WhatsApp or whatever like that. It's a bit more, you know, task and sort of, like, topic-focused, I guess. But it's free to create like a group in there. There's obviously paid features if you want to, you know, take it further or whatever, but I just really like it, because for years and years, like, I've been using Slack, and it just sometimes it feels like such a bloated sort of experience. Like, I like that this app is just like nice, clean, it's fresh, it's got less features, which is I actually think a positive. Like, you know, you can't voice call people and you can't sort of introduce, you know, all these different sort of crazy things in there, but it's nice and clean and simple. It's that's kind of what it does.
It reminds me of Microsoft Teams in a little way. I don't know if you played with that at all, but Teams is like a get rid of email, kind of Slack, but not exactly, like, channel-based team kind of communication thing. This is interesting. Is there a desktop version for it? Is it just on the web or just on the app?
No, there's a desktop version as well that you can download. Cool. So we've actually switched some of our Slack teams over to this app, and I've just been playing with it, and it's still behind a little bit on some of the features that you'd actually want. Like, it's still under active development. It only came out, I think, about a month ago, but I just like it. It's a fresh sort of take on the space. And I know there is Microsoft Teams. I think Google has Google Chat or something like that, if you're a G Suite user, which we've played with as well. But this one, to me at least, kind of gels with the way I think about sort of interacting with teams. And like I said, sorry, Jason, it's a really hard thing to demo on video. But if anyone's interested in it, go check it out.
No need to be sorry. There's buttons to press. I just
keep pressing them.
And it has bots too. I mean, we all love bots, so that's a huge thing now, right?
Ada bots.
The Ada bot is in there.
Nice. Oh, and someone's at my front door. All right. Twist app. And that is free in the Play Store. Awesome. All right.
Your turn.
My turn. Do you remember? Go back in time. Want to go back in time and remember at Google I.O. when they were on the stage and they were talking about some of the kind of enhancing your life features that are going to be hitting Android P. One of those was called Wind Down. This was the idea that you could set a time in your phone inside your settings that says, at this point of every day, I want my phone to like make it miserable for me to use it because I want to wind down. I don't want the last moments of my day to be staring at this phone. And the way that they did that is they turned the entire user interface grayscale. And I don't know if that's annoying enough to get somebody to stop using it, but yeah, it probably is. You want to see things a full color and you can't anymore. And that's the idea of wind down, that it would do that. Well, there is an app that will do this for you now. If you want to recreate this, maybe you don't have Android P or you just want to check it out right now, because it's not actually in the developer beta of Android P yet, this actual feature, wind down. But you can get it now with an app called Color Breeze. And they have it posted as Color Breeze, an alternative to Google's Wind Down. And it does take a little bit of tweaking. You have to go in. I had to go in to my developer settings and enable USB debugging and then plug my phone into my my computer and to do an ADB command. And that would essentially give the permissions that are required to do this. But once it's active, I can go into the settings. It was very easy to do, by the way. It's all detailed in the Play Store listing. And you can go in here. You can set your bedtime, set your wake up, which days of the week that it would actually do this. And, you know, obviously turn it on so that it would follow that schedule. But if you want to see what it looks like when everything goes grayscale, oh my goodness, everything is grayscale. Isn't that the most grayscale-y thing you've ever seen?
Wow, I'm transported back into time.
Yeah, it's like you're watching an old-time TV smartphone.
Yeah, so, this is what phones were like when I was a kid.
Yeah. this is what phones were like when smartphones were like when my parents were kids. This is how it was back then. And yeah, so it's basically a way to do wind down now, and you can set that schedule. I'll go in here and disable the grayscale because it's not time to wind down yet. I'm doing a show, all right? But later, sometime around like 10 o'clock, I don't know, it's going to go grayscale on me.
So Jason wakes up at 5 a.m. I feel for you, Jason.
We should talk after the show about Jason's schedule.
I made some changes in my life. I actually love it a lot, but yeah, we'll talk about that later. Anyways, that is it. It's called Color Breeze. It's free. It's got 100 downloads. It's a very, very small amount of downloads, so it's relatively new. But if you like that feature and you want it now, you can. It's called Color Breeze. Check it out.
I want this feature.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to do. All right, and with that, it's time for you to place your vote for your favorite app of the week. All you have to do is go to twit.to/AAApoll371, and I didn't test the link, but I'm sure that works.
It works.
Carrot Weather, Voce Podcast Player, Vote. Twist App, and Color Breeze are your options. You can place your vote at twit.to/AAApoll371, and Victor is going to place his vote. Carrot Yay! Weather gets the vote.
I knew he was going to go for Carrot Weather. I knew it.
Boom.
Well, Victor likes snarky weather reports.
Yeah, we know this about Victor. He likes snarky weather reports. We all know this.
This is what Victor and I have in common.
It was the flux capacitor, wasn't it, Victor?
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's all it takes to win Victor's.
I can always just go, psh.
I actually watched Back to the Future while camping this weekend. So
nice.
It's like a collision of Back to the Future in the last 48 hours.
Watched a movie while camping.
Yeah, the campground that we were at had a movie night projector thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it was freezing, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cold. Anyways, twit.to/AAApoll371, and we'll check in on that next week and see if the guests, this time led by Russell, continue their winning spree because the guests are ahead, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For now. Sorry about that.
No pressure. No pressure whatsoever. Russell, it's always great getting you on. We really appreciate you taking time and joining us today. We had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I had fun too. Thanks so much for having me on again.
Absolutely. Anytime. You're always welcome on the show. What do you want to leave people with? Where do you want people to go to find out all the cool stuff you're working on?
They find
we kind
you?
Of talked about it a little bit, but where can people find you?
You're never going to expect this, but you can go to pocketcast.com if you want to find out more about Pocket Cast. Okay, we have a shiny new blog. All it has on it is a privacy update because we did the same thing a million other companies did to your inbox recently. We updated our privacy policy, so there's blog.pocketcast.com. And if you want to follow me personally for whatever reason, you want to find out what I had for lunch or who I'm arguing with on the internet this week, it is twitter.com/rustyshelf is the place you want to go.
Fantastic.
Oh, look. Look, I'm promoting Flo right there. There you go, Flo. See, I said something nice. Yes.
Friends right supporting
next
friends.
Next one down is me criticizing Apple. That's pretty normal for my Twitter account, basically. That's what you can expect.
Right on, Russell. Thank you again, and we will talk to you soon. We really appreciate it.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
All right. And what about you, Flo?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Me?
You.
Of
course you.
Oh, I'm doing a show with Megan Maroney soon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, we just had our first meeting today.
Nice.
Before the show, we were collaborating and
did you stop, collaborate, and listen?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay, yes. Good. Good.
Yes, it's really exciting. We're going to do a bunch of smart home stuff, and I have been reading the questions that you sent me over from the website last week, so thank you for them. It's happening. I believe our first episode is July 5th, I think.
Sounds about right, somewhere around there.
I'm pretty sure it's July 5th. So just stay tuned for that. And I guess, you know, if you need more from me, I've always got the other podcast.
Which is? Podcast. There we go.
Really,
it's okay. It's a name that can be spoken on this show.
It can be spoken, right. And it is the other podcast that I do with Andy and Hucko and
once
Russell.
Once Russell, but will you come back and visit?
I know. I'm actually just want to put out there, I'm very happy to have Russell here next to me in TV form. I thought
you were about to say I'm very happy that Russell left. Oh my God. Too soon.
The show just isn't the same. But they've moved on, Russell.
So fast. So damn fast.
Ron, what about you?
Yes. So I've been busy. I've been podcasting. I forgot to mention it last week. But if you go over to ifanboy.com, I did a podcast with the guys about Deadpool 2. And then we also did one about Solo this past weekend. So if you saw the Star Wars movie and want to hear what some nerds think about Solo, you can go listen to us talk about it for an hour. Because we were born in the 70s, and that's what we talk about. So, yeah, there you go. So go to ifanboy.com, check that out. And you can follow me on Twitter at RonXO and on Instagram at RonXO. So.
Is that a no-spoiler podcast?
No, we give a spoiler warning in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we go deep. We talk about stuff.
All right.
Sorry. Yeah.
It'd be hard to talk about a movie for an hour and not spoil something.
Can you just go tomorrow morning and just see it?
I don't know. Well, no, I can't.
You want to borrow my movie
pass?
This
is a bad weekend for the. Oh, this is a bad week for that.
I'm not using it.
I'll figure it out one of these days. One of these days. Victor, thank you. Have you seen Solo?
No, not yet. Maybe later this week.
All right. Well, let me know how it is, and
I'm
I'll live through you.
Star Wars fan, but
yeah.
I gave my review in our little Allo chat.
You can read it later. About Solo.
I remember that. I read that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was camping. The aforementioned camping trip, so I apologize.
Yeah. Always busy.
It's true. I'm on Twit. That's what I do. I work
it's
here.
It's true.
I'm on Twit shows.
You do work here.
So you can find me here. You're already here. That's where you'll find me. YellowGoldMusic.com if you want to find the music that I write. It's there, and it can be found
and
listened
to. And on Spotify.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's on Tidal.
And on Tidal.
It's on Tidal. If you want the high res,
you should open with that. Ooh, I've got an album on Tidal right next to Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I don't know how close it appears to Taylor Swift, but it's on Tidal along with all the other hundreds of thousands. I don't know how many artists, but anyways, you can find it wherever you want to find your streaming music. Yellow Gold Fever Dreamer is the name of the album. And hey, I hope you enjoy it.
But it's awesome.
Thanks, man. That's it for this week. Voicemails can be left for us, and we will find them underneath the doormat at 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails as well. We'll find those there as well, AAA at twit.tv. We're on Twitter, Android Show. We are on. God, why? Suddenly, this is the first time I've ever done this, apparently.
371 episodes. Jeez. 371.
Anyways, tickets at twit.tv, twit.tv/AAA, and so many other things that I forgot. But you know what? That's just going to have to be all I do because it's time to end the show. We love you guys, and we'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Mwah!
Should we do something fun or delicious or fun?
Please, I'm actually starving. Delicious? I could really use a snack right
Ooh,
now.
Ooh, look at this.
Have you ever heard of the dark and white chocolate Oreo? No, neither had
no,
I.
It sounds like we're going to want more than one.
Well, now I would like to go on record that so thanks to Jason's generosity, I do have this. And the black and white cookie is one of the best cookie pastry concoctions ever, and that's really what this graphic on the label is showing. It's showing like a black and white cookie cream action going on inside of it. So I've got high hopes now.
Cream action indeed, Ron.
And Ron doesn't have to share his Oreos.
No, you get the whole package to yourself.
I do share them, though. I take them to work because I don't want to eat them all.
Yeah, fair enough. I take them to work, too, which is basically this little hand reaches itself in here once we've eaten one and shares it with the rest of everyone here. Yeah, that. Go away, hand. Quit being creepy. Ah, creepy and weird.
Just fell all over the table.
Okay.
Great. Well, Oreo all right, crumbs.
So they feel smaller than regular Oreos. Do they feel smaller?
Yeah, they feel smaller.
Maybe thinner? Yep.
Although the middle is like, the middle is two-tone. It's dark on this side and white on the other.
It's black and white, yeah. So the exact flavoring, it says, is dark and white flavored cream.
Okay.
Chocolate sandwich cookies with dark and white chocolate flavored cream.
Okay, so it's the white filling.
They appear to be Malaysian.
Yes.
You bought these from Malaysia?
I bought them on the internet. The world's market. It's called Amazon.
I know. Oh, I thought you meant AliExpress.
I thought it was AliExpress.
Actually, yeah. I haven't checked that as a source. Maybe you will find some.
I'm not buying food off that. I won't buy makeup off AliExpress. I won't even put that stuff on my face.
All right. Dark and white chocolate Oreo. Begin.
Okay.
Oh, I feel so left out. I'm just going to drink this. Liquid Oreos. So good.
Here you go, Russell. There you go.
This literally tastes no different than a regular Oreo.
Hmm. Yeah.
Russell, I'm going to eat your Oreo for you since you're so far away.
Thanks,
bud. Is that a euphemism? Is that a euphemism?
I really appreciate it.
I want to eat your Oreo.
Oh, my goodness. Please, no.
These are really good.
They are good.
Wait, Oreos. What's the expiration date on these?
You probably don't want to look too close.
Do they taste coconutty to you? Either of you?
Yes. Kind of does.
Does it taste a little coconutty?
Uh-huh.
Does that count as an Oreo? I mean, it's...
Yes, that counts as a black and white Oreo. Does it have Oreo?
Doesn't taste so good.
That coconut you might be tasting, it might be the fact that it's old.
It's possible. Don't think too hard about the expiration date. At this point, I've given up on finding things that are still okay to eat.
There is no coconut in this at all.
All right. So, I mean, I feel like it's kind of along the line of the traditional Oreo flavors that we already know. It's just taking two traditional flavors and smushing them together.
I will go take you one step further, is that it is marketing itself off as something different, but it tastes just like a regular Oreo.
Yeah.
And as we've already stated, the precedence is that regular Oreo is a 10.
Right.
But I'm going to knock off a point and a half for trying to be something else when it's is just a regular Oreo. So 8.5.
I mean, but there's a little bit of that chocolate flavor in there. So it's not just purely tastes just like a regular Oreo, except it's colored differently. It's kind of a little bit of the traditional Oreo and a little bit of the chocolate Oreo filling.
So, you know. I got 1.5 that's with white filling and 1.5 that's with mostly dark filling.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there we go. Nice. Frank Gorshin. Exactly. Thank you. Very good.
Bravo. I give Victor a 10, and I give the Oreo an 8.
Well, I got to give it up for to Flo for having them in that same exact position. So. Teamwork.
What is that filling flavor?
I don't know. Is it not normal?
It probably was normal at one time.
Oreo. I'm just having a hard time. Anyway, I give these an 8.
There was a time. Wow, this thing's almost gone.
Actually, I give these a 9. I give these a 9 because I think they're delicious.
Dang.
Well, I give these a 0 because I don't have any.
I'm sorry.
Aww.
I'll send you a package of Oreos if you send me a t-shirt.
What?
So, Jason makes it an 8. I make it an 8.5. Flo makes it a 9.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the proof is in the package.
In the pudding?
Or the fact that there is
hardly anything left in the package. Which is how the chocolate middle tastes like chocolate pudding.
Yes.
FYI.
That's what it is. Not coconut. Chocolate pudding.
It's
I think it's the pudding flavor.
It's the pudding. Yeah. All right. So
I can see that.
If you're traveling, and by that I mean to a different part of the country and in time, because these are old, then...
Wait, how old are they?
I have no idea, but... I can't find an expiration
date anywhere.
It's okay.
Ron did this one with us. So if we suffer, we all suffer together.
Oh. Wait a minute. Nope. I found a date. I just missed it before. There's two of them.
Sorry, turn the kitchen light on.
It's hard to read, but it is up there. And it says the November 25th, 2017 or November 26th, 2018.
Or... That's an important or.
Or?
Yes. They're both represented.
Just choose your adventure.
Yes. What would you like the expiration date to be? And it will be.
No, I think this means this is when they were packaged. And I think this is
good?
When they, yeah.
Oh, so they're good through November.
This is the lot number. 34A1 okay. is the lot.
All right.
I don't know. They're Malaysian, so...
You just never know how those Malaysian Oreo cookie makers.
This is the American
expiration. Well, I'm just saying they might have different standards than we do of how they label things.
Yeah.
That's
it's a little
what
different.
I was trying to imply. Thank you.
It's a little different, but delicious nonetheless.
It was good. I had 2, but also because I was kind of hungry and running low on blood sugar, and I didn't want to crash during the show.
I've got Oreo cookies on my Oreo device.
Good thing it's IP67 rated, so it's dust proof.
Yes, Oreo dust proof.